Oh, hi, everybody. My name is Matt Storrs, and welcome to Matt's Planning. On today's episode, I have an expert on who I'm very excited to talk with. Expert, please introduce yourself and tell us what you're an expert in.
Hi, I'm Valon Trub, and I'm an expert in, I would say, independent film distribution. I have two movies through various forms of distribution. It played in theaters in LA. You can find it on the apps everyone knows and loves, and it was an interesting journey in baptism by fire in learning the process.
Absolutely. I feel like film distribution, whether it's independent or the standard film distribution with the major studios and everything like that, is a very deep small bowl, if to use the metaphor there. And so I think that a lot of the things that people overlook when they think of film distribution is that, like, oh, the movie came out, that's all that really matters. But there's all these things that lead up to it. For instance, a lot of people talk about whether or not you should be submitting to festivals, and you want to get the big ones like Cannes and Sundance and what have you. But you want to also try your best to get into the little known festivals, build that word of mouth as you try to get to the bigger festivals. And if you can't get into those festivals, or you are just trying to build out your resume for your film, what I've understood is that you can actually create your own festival, because a lot of people will not look up whether or not those film festivals actually exist. So you can, all you got to do is make a website for a film festival, say plausible films that could exist, and then you can do that. And I know a number of films that have done that, such as Assassin 33 AD. They have a whole list of fake film festivals on their website, or at least they did when I looked at it. Or maybe they are just small film festivals. But another thing about the distribution is whether or not you want to get on streaming, whether or not you want to invest in like DVDs and what have you. But a lot of people, they think it's a trend that's going to be coming back of getting stuff released on video. Get those VHSs out, get those Betamax, if you can find that technology and those abilities, and you release it on there, hoping that, much like we have vinyl heads right now, there'll be VHS people and Betamax people in the next 5 years who are like, I got to find the VHS version of this film that I love so much. And a lot of people also consider the idea of, where do you release the movie? Do you release the movie just exclusively in festivals and then try to get a distribution deal on the internet, one of these streaming services? Or do you want to go and do something that is, pick one country, pick Lithuania, pick Luxembourg, and just be the most beloved movie in Luxembourg? And then people are like, getting the word of mouth of like the number one movie in Luxembourg, that seems so strange. What's going on in Luxembourg? We got to see this movie. And then ultimately, when it gets released in stateside and in the UK, wherever else you want to do it, people are like, oh, this is an international film. I never knew about the Luxembourgian film community. And so they don't know. They don't know that it was filmed in the United States. And you just use that cachet as best you can to get people kind of wound up and interested. And then ultimately, I think that the most important thing with film distribution is you got to figure out where you're going to get the money from it. You got to be able to do research and everything like that. But then ultimately, if you don't know how to do something, you don't have the time to do something, because it seems like it would be a labor intensive process and time intensive process, you got to be able to figure out where to get the money from. So it's not necessarily an issue of like cutting corners or anything like that. But if you are at a bar and somebody says that they are related to one of the people that is connected to Santander, the bank, all you got to do is be like, oh, well, let me get your card, let me get your Instagram, and I will follow up with you. And then that person, even though they may have been very, very out of it at that bar when you met them, you follow up with them and you just let them become a producer, because everybody wants to say they're a movie producer. And you don't actually give them any creative control or anything like that, but you take that money and you use it for the distribution side. And worst case scenario, you give it out as a Santander DVD with every new account opened. And that's not a non-traditional method of getting a movie distributed. But if that's what it takes, I think Santander would be a good option, given if that person ends up being truthful. Now, based on what you've heard so far, about how much of that would you say was accurate?
I'll give two ratings. Okay. One is, I would say it's 90% accurate in terms of the approach I originally had.
Okay.
And how almost everyone has going into it.
Okay.
And then I would say it's about 50 to 60% accurate after going through the experience of spending money the wrong way.
Oh, okay. Interesting. Tell me more about your experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's something about it where some lessons, you just have to spend money the wrong way. And you take that loss. Everyone has losses. But you take that loss and it sort of becomes a lesson of, I am never going to make that kind of mistake again. Every decision I make is going to be a strategic decision for what I want to accomplish. It's not going to be a gamble. And a lot of what you discussed and a lot of what people going into this, whether they consciously know it or not, is a gamble. They're gambling. Festivals are a gamble. Everything's a gamble, except it's a kind of gamble where you're guaranteed to lose. And I'll try to be cohesive in the story of distribution from beginning, middle to end. But I do want to talk about quickly physical media, because you mentioned VHS. Physical media is definitely going to come back. It never really went away. And that's something I learned. I have a movie distributed by Bayview Entertainment, and they pushed for DVD distribution. And I argued. I said, no. I gave this whole speech at the Anthology Film Archives where my movie was screening and how everyone's on streaming. And now I have to eat my words, because they were right. A lot of people in this country actually can't stream. They have to rely on physical media just because internet access is not the same everywhere.
Right.
In New York City and LA, you're going to be streaming. If you're living in the middle of the country, you might not necessarily have that internet access to be able to stream. So a lot of people rely on DVDs. They rely on public libraries where you can get free access to DVDs. And that's right. A big part of when people think of distribution, especially the indie side. And I mean real indie, not Robert Downey Jr. is making a quote unquote independent film. I mean actual independent cinema. When you think of distribution, it's not about just, oh, let me get this movie picked up and be Clerks, where a big studio picks up this movie that I made for $10,000 and it makes $20 million and becomes this huge hit. That's not necessarily the case going into it. Your goal is, you made a movie, you want people to see that movie, and you hopefully want some sort of money to come in through that movie.
Right.
And with physical media, you sort of have that with distributors like Bayview Entertainment, who's excellent to work with. You sort of have that. So now to sort of go to the beginning, yeah, you make a movie, you got to start thinking about distribution from the very beginning. The whole concept of, I'm going to make a great movie, people are going to love it because it's a great movie, quality stuff succeeds. That just, especially in the internet age, same with music and streaming, it just is not necessarily the case anymore. And the reality is, most distributors, and I'd wager even say in Hollywood, most people don't actually even watch movies. Right. There's a good chance your movie's not even going to be seen. Question is, who's in it? Let me see the poster and give me the tagline. What's the IMDb rating? It's sort of like, that's how a movie gets distributed. It's sort of like your movie's cachet as an influencer is how it gets distributed. And that's nothing new. I mean, that's an industry of stars. And even during this whole Marvel era in the independent world, it was still always about what's the name, because it's a star-driven industry. And that's where I think you mentioned getting a producer from a bank. I think you were partially right in the sense that you need to have a name attached. I don't think you're necessarily going to get the money that way.
Mm-hmm.
But what you can do is find celebrities. I was very fortunate for the dirty kind. Michael Madsen from Reservoir Dogs, just Species. So many great movies in the 90s. Great actor, great person, very nice to deal with. We were able to get him to put his name on the Dirty Kind as an executive producer. Yeah. And just having something like that, just having that name to be able to put on the box, Michael Madsen sort of giving his thumbs up stamp of approval, helps lock in distribution. And that's something you need to think about in advance when you're making the movie. It's, maybe let me get an actor. I can't afford, obviously, DiCaprio, even if he did want to do the movie, but maybe I can get an actor who's now doing smaller roles, doing these independent movies. There's a lot of them around. Maybe some of your favorite actors from the 90s or the 80s now they're a lot more accessible and you can get someone. So instead of spending crazy money on a lot of the places that you mentioned, you can take $10,000 and get an actor for a day to be able to put that name on the box, which again is not a new concept. It's something that's been done since the beginning of the industry. But when you do that, then when you're looking for distribution, you're not selling your movie, you're selling the name, which right. is exactly what Hollywood does. Who's in this? Leonardo DiCaprio, Joaquin Phoenix, Margot Robbie. So that's how you sort of start locking in distribution. The festival route is one of the biggest scams around, second maybe only to like the college industry, in the sense that you spend all this insane money, you walk out with this shiny piece of paper that says you spent all this money, and then you sort of hold out your hand expecting to people to give you money in return for it. And that's not how it works. The reality is you have to assume you're not going to get into Sundance. You're not going to get into any of these festivals. That's just the reality. Unless you have connections, in which case this podcast is not going to be helping you anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is most of those festivals, the movies that they're booking have stars. So even Sundance, which was this glorious independent festival for independent films, that's why I said a real independent movie, not something with like Robert Downey Jr. doing a movie outside of the system where it's still sort of system money involved. Sundance needs to have movies with those stars. Otherwise, people aren't going to go to Sundance.
Right. They need those stars, similar to the movie itself. They need those stars to make that festival profitable.
Exactly. So I wouldn't say Sundance is like a festival for independent movies. Sundance is a festival for celebrities doing semi-art house films. That's what it's really like a festival for, at least at this point. Mm-hmm. And yeah, occasionally you have like a Clerks breakthrough, all that, but it's also a different era because once we transitioned into digital cameras, the amount of movies being made and submitted just exploded because it's much more expensive. It's a lot harder. And you need, I mean, with a film camera, you need some to have some sort of basic film theory skill to be able to understand it because every shot has that much more weight behind it because every shot costs that much more money. You have limited film, but you need lighting. You need people. You need to know how to use the equipment. And you have to sort of somewhat know what you're doing. Whereas with digital cameras, there is no more pre-production. There is no financial value behind each shot because let's do it again. Let's do it again. Let's move the camera. Do it here. You're not counting film. You're not paying per foot. Lighting is totally different. It's just totally different. And that's not to say a lot of people who are making films in the digital era aren't still approaching it with experience and with knowledge of how to make it. But it's just saying there's so many more people making movies who have no clue, who just basically have a cell phone that can film and are submitting garbage. So you can right. literally have 2 hours of just someone filming a wall and that can get submitted now. So the competition is just so much broader now, but it's not necessarily better movies. It's a lot more crap. But when there's that much more crap, people watching stuff become a lot more disenchanted with it. So they pay less attention to it. So even if something's good, it's sort of gets clumped into this pile of crap because the trust isn't there between the audience and what's on screen anymore. And right. that's why festivals, you know, I'm not saying totally discount festivals. I'm saying be very strategic with the festival. Do right. research on the history. Is it going to screen in theaters? Are there distributors? And when I say distributors, I don't mean Warner Brothers. I mean, you know, independent distributors that have connections with that festival, have movies in the past from that festival, gotten distribution, gotten physical media distribution, stuff like that. That's how I would approach the festival side of things.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And I think that it also makes a lot of sense that like if a film screener watched How Paint Dries retrospective 2023 for 2 hours of a wall with a baby blue paint drying, and then they watched a very serious or very fun movie that people put a lot of thought and effort into, they're not necessarily going to be in the right mindset to really appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also, I mean, we live in an era where you need to think about what has cachet for the big movies and try to leverage that for your movie. At the end of the day, theatrical release is king. Mm-hmm. That's just hands down. Movies released on Netflix, movies released on Amazon Prime, they're no different than made-for-TV movies in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. And that's not to knock made-for-TV movies. Mm-hmm. If you go on like apps, which I love, like Tubi, stuff like that, they have a lot of those movies on there. those are very, very well-made movies. Now, Spielberg's early films were made for TV movies. They are good movies. The thing is, they don't have the same cachet. They don't have the same cultural impact. They don't have that sort of zeitgeist about them. And that means they don't last. So, there, you know, a movie that came out on Netflix might have been number one on Netflix for a month. But 10 years from now, are people going to be talking about that movie versus a movie that came out in theaters and then people are rediscovering on streaming 10 years later? No, right. You know, something that came out theatrically has a different weight behind it. So work with your distributor, you know, if you're able to get an independent distributor, work with them to try to get a limited theatrical release. If they're offering you an advance, which still sometimes happens, say, what do I need this little bit of money for? Let's put it towards amplifying the long run, because and it's not the same everywhere. New York City used to have a lot of movie theaters and be very culturally relevant. It's not the same place anymore. You don't have that sort of culture of cinema in New York City the way you used to. LA, you still sort of have that. You still have independent theater chains. You can still work with independent movie theaters about blocking up theaters for your movie, saying, you know, let me get a 2-week release in this theater, 2 showings a day or 1 showing a day. Let's work on some sort of split. I'll pay in advance and then we split the box office, something like that. You can still work in places like LA. You can in New York, but it's also the digital age. You know, you can pick up a phone, you can send an email. You don't have to be in LA to work with LA people.
Right.
So that's what I would say. Get your movie into a screen, even limited. It'll change the way the press covers you. Because a lot of critics can't even cover a movie if it's not screening theatrically anywhere. The press afterwards will be much easier. I mean, the dirty kind screened in theaters in LA, and now the Academy of Arts and Sciences reached out about putting the script in their library.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, it was just a bonkers, you know, I had to Google the email address to make sure it was real. It was one of those moments because I'm like, this is like, who, me? But it was weird because at the end of the day, there is a box office record. There is a record of that movie. And it becomes a part of history versus something that just goes to streaming. Now, that's not to say, oh, streaming's just a fad. It's going to be here forever. But, you know, it's the amount of popularity it has is going to fade a little bit, just like television didn't kill the movie theater. It's just the model is going to have to evolve a little bit. And also the types of movies coming out. You know, people say, well, there has to be more than Marvel movies. Yeah, that is true. But movie theaters also have to be able to show more than Marvel movies. And right now there is sort of like this soft monopoly on big budget distribution, sort of like Luxottica has with the sunglasses industry and the glasses industry. I mean, think about it this way. If Disney tells AMC, you have to show our movie on this many screens and you can't show that movie, or we're not going to give you the next Star Wars movie. You know, that's sort of a monopoly. You're leveraging your power, your library to control what gets shown in theaters. And that's a big problem also. Tarantino gave a great interview where he talked about how his movie got bumped from a theater that he had a contract to screen in LA. He had a contract that they would screen his movie in that theater. And then the theater told him, we're going to have to cut it short by a week because Disney said, if we don't put one of their Star Wars movie in it starting from this date, they're not going to work with us again.
Wow. That's nuts.
And that's Tarantino, you know? So you're dealing, I mean, it's not an industry of art. It's a corporate industry, which is okay, but there has to be a balance. And I think right now the balance comes from corporations overextending themselves, losing a ton of money. And then that's when you sort of get a swing in an era, which we're going to see now. It happened in the 60s too. The studio system went bankrupt with all their like sword and sandal epics. And then you got the new Hollywood era. So it's not a new thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And one more thing, the last thing I sort of want to cover. You mentioned VHS. Mm-hmm. Well, I absolutely believe physical media is going to come back, especially once streaming apps start losing their licenses and the movie you thought you owned, you realize you don't really own. But I don't think it's going to be VHS because like vinyl, the reason why vinyl is coming back is because it's quality recordings. You know, it is very good quality recordings. Whereas VHS is not good quality. That's why I think Blu-ray, you know, once they got to Blu-ray, you're pretty much watching the quality of something. You're going to have the same experience visually, at least, of what you're watching maybe in a movie theater in terms of the sharpness, the, you know, the reproduction of what was intended for when they made the movie. So I think VHS might be around as like a niche thing, but, you know, Blu-ray, I think you don't really need 4K, but once they got to Blu-ray, I think at that point, that's about as good as you're going to get for a home screening experience.
Absolutely. This has been so insightful. I've learned so much. It's crazy. If people wanted to learn more about film distribution or more about you and your projects, where would you recommend that they go?
Well, Susie Q, my movie Susie Q, is actually just now ranked one of the top 5,000 streaming movies in the UK, which when you think of the hundreds of thousands of movies out there is pretty cool. Susie Q, you know, whatever apps you love, search it. It's probably there. Amazon Prime, Apple TV, Tubi, Plex. It's all over the place. The Dirty Kind, you can get it on DVD. It's also on Roku, the Roku channel, Amazon. Look for it wherever you want. The Dirty Kind and Susie Q. Or, you know, you can see Suburban Pimp on YouTube. Or visit TrubFilmCo.com or at TrubFilmCo and you know, see what I'm doing, what projects I have. And in terms of learning about the industry with each project, I learn a little more and I love to share a little more about it.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for joining me today. And I can't thank you enough. This has been great. I can't wait to watch your movies.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. My name is Matt Storrs, and this has been Matt's Planning. Quick shout out to Ryan Lawson, who made the theme music for Matt's Planning. He's part of Beat Blender Studios, which can be found at Beat Blender Studios on Instagram and TikTok. Or if you're in the market for some amazing music, you can contact him directly at beatblenderstudios@gmail.com.